This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
It's Patricia Karpus, host of Untangle, the award-winning podcast that covers topics like optimizing brain health, finding your purpose, how to sleep better, harnessing the power of anxiety, successfully changing habits, finding more happiness and joy, and overall, all the many ways to live your best life. If you enjoy hearing from thought leaders, neuroscientists, psychologists, nutritionists, business leaders, and more, join us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. This is episode 57. My name is Dwayne Osterlund, and I'm your host. I'm also the founder of Novus Mindful Life Institute Counseling and Recovery Center in Long Beach, California. If you or anyone you know is struggling with any of life's difficulties, please reach out to us. We can help. You can find more information about us at theaddictedmind.com/help. So today's guest is Lacey Bentley, and she is going to talk about women, love, and sex addiction. It was a great interview. It was great to talk to her about it. And also, just to let you know, she has just released her new book, Addicted to Love, and you can find that. I'll have all that information in the show notes as well. So that's really exciting. So I thought it would be great to have her on as a guest on The Addicted Mind and talk about what she's sharing with the world and helping women who are struggling with love and sex addiction. Once again, if you're enjoying The Addicted Mind podcast, please rate and review us in iTunes. That really does help, and I really appreciate it. It helps really get the word out and helps increase our visibility on iTunes as well. And if you're interested, you can join our Facebook community. Just go to Facebook and search The Addicted Mind podcast and click to join. There's a few questions that you can answer to be part of the group. But I'm working to grow that and to get more interaction and get more resources out for people who are interested in helping people with addiction. So please go there and do that. I'd really appreciate it. And okay, so let's just go ahead and start this episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. My guest today is Lacey Bentley, and she is going to talk about women, love addiction, sex addiction, and all of that information. So Lacey, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Dwayne, first of all. So I am author of Addicted to Love, and I do recovery mentoring and coaching. Also, I'm a mom and married to the coolest guy on the planet.
Awesome.
So yeah, that's kind of fun. Being a mom is crazy, by the way. Hardest job ever.
Being a parent, I'm a parent as well. And yeah, that is, I would agree with you. That is the toughest job in the world.
Yeah.
Definitely. So tell us a little bit about your story. I had somehow, I don't actually remember exactly how I found you online, but I think I was looking specifically for resources for women who are dealing with like love and sex addiction. And you came up and I saw your book and I reached out to you and I said, hey, I would love to have you on the show and talk. So here you are. So tell me a little bit about how all this evolved for you and what happened. And
okay, sure. So as a young woman, I started using actually this kind of this Reader's Digest size or TV guide size Playboy that was just erotic stories and comics. And I found one babysitting when I was 13, and everything kind of progressed from there. I got into hentai or sexualized anime later on. And as an adult, as a woman, I had quit the porn, I had quit the anime, and I was getting married, and I found myself really struggling when there were challenges in my marriage, challenges in our relationship. When I was stressed out about becoming a mom because we had a honeymoon baby, I would go into this place of fantasy, this place of not being connected to my real life. I would think about not sexually, but I would think about other former boyfriends. I was engaged before I met my husband and met him actually shortly after coming out of that engagement. And so I would go back to those what ifs and if onlys. And if things had worked out with this guy, would I feel less pain? Would I be less depressed? Well, I didn't know at the time I was dealing with a very real chemical depression and anxiety disorder. And so that's kind of where my background on all of this comes from. And then fast forward quite a few years, went back to school to get a degree in psychology and started researching female pornography usage, realizing there's like nothing out there and going, why not? Why aren't we talking about this? And then that's when I started to come to terms with my own use of pornography and that what I had used was pornographic and how that had impacted me long term.
Right. So you discovered this one. This is, seems like a common story for a lot of people who struggle with sex and porn addiction is they stumble upon this material and in their life, they use it. It becomes their way of escape and avoidance of pain, of depression, of sadness, of hurt, of loss, of shame, or whatever, which it sounds like that happened for you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what I found interesting with women? I'm not sure if this happens for guys, but I think it probably does because we're pretty similar when it comes to this stuff. I would even avoid the positive emotions. I'd feel overwhelmed with love and care for my baby, and I would just need to disconnect. It was too much. I could not handle any intensity whatsoever. Even the happy stuff was triggering, and I'd want to disconnect and go into fantasy. So that was an interesting discovery.
Right. So you started to use this as a way just to deal with any kind of emotional overwhelm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just numb it. Keep it calm. Keep it mellow. Don't want any intensity. Not trying to cause trouble, right? Yep, all the time.
And so when did you decide, okay, I have to do something about that? So you were talking about you started to discover, as you started to learn about it more, you said, hey, maybe this is a problem for me.
Yeah, so it was actually about 10 years into my marriage. So I'd been doing this fantasy thing for quite a long time. And I was sitting at a table with a friend. She and I went out to dinner, not really dinner, but like dessert every other week or a couple times a month. And we had been going to the same restaurant for a long time. And we'd been kind of having the same waiter. He was a late night waiter, I guess. And kind of, you know, we would kind of mess around with him, not really flirting, at least she wasn't, but I was. And he would flirt back. We would leave a great tip. You know, that's one way waiters get their tips is they flirt. And at one point, he actually sat down and put his arm around me. And I could smell that he had alcohol in his breath. And she was holding a steak knife, and she put it in the end of the table and started spinning it. And then she picks it up, she points at him and goes, shouldn't you be at work? And then she points at me and goes, you're married. And I was like, you're rude. She's like, I don't care. You leave. And he was like, you're right. I got to get back to work. And I was mortified. I was so embarrassed. And then as we sat there, she said, I love you and I will not do this with you. I will not let this happen in my presence. We're going to leave. And we did. We left. And that night, I just started to come apart and I realized, what am I doing? Because everything up to that point had been fantasy.
Right.
And then this man sits down, this attractive man, 10 years younger than me. He's like 23. 10 years younger than me, puts his arm around me. And I realized I was out of control.
So you kind of saw that in that moment, you could see that this fantasy was now coming into your life in a real way.
Yeah. Yeah. Not only in a real way, but also it was impacting my best friend. And she was having to deal with my out of control emotions and sexuality. And I didn't want to hurt her like that. Then I started to get real about how I could hurt my children and my husband and myself.
So you really started to see this and then kind of woke up, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was painful. It sucked. It really sucked.
So what did you do at that point? What happened?
I actually found, because I didn't at that point realize that I had also had pornography in my history, but I just found a women's pornography addiction recovery support group through my local church and started going to 12-step. And I, for a long time, felt like I didn't belong, but then realizing that the root of all of this comes from just trying to avoid pain, just trying to have connection, just not knowing how to life in general. And so while some of the women were using porn, most of us weren't. Most of us had very similar stories to mine. A lot had actually acted out in the affairs more than I did. Mine was very minimal physically, but in my mind, it wasn't.
Right. And so, okay. So then you started to meet more of these, you started going to these meetings. Tell me a little bit about how, in your experience, how this shows up differently for women than men.
For women, we hear the old cliches that women, everything's kind of like a soup bowl or a salad for them. We mix it all together and men have these shoe boxes or whatever and compartmentalize. So that's true, I think, to a large extent, also for women, you know, along those same lines, actually, not to change track. When we are out of integrity in our sexuality, in our spending, in our food, in a relationship, when we're out of integrity, we're a mess. And we can't pretend over here that we can be an obsession or compulsion and not have that leak over everywhere. And I believe that's also true for men. And at the same time, for women, it is so huge for them. And they shame themselves so much more. And also, it's only been the last few years we've started talking about women as users, compulsive users even, of pornographic materials and mainstream pornography and sex addicts. And women have, at least since the 80s, because there was research done then in a book written by Charlotte Castle, in 1989. So at least since the 80s, and I became friends with porn in 1989. So this is not new. We just haven't been talking about it.
I think that's so true. And I see that as well in our work here, where when women do come in, it does look it looks different, but at the same time, the shame is even though, like, when men come in and they're dealing with pornography addiction or sex addiction, there's a ton of shame. But when women come in, the shame is almost, it's greater. It's like it's a social shame. It's like, how could I even think about sex in this way? I must be really broken or really hurt or shameful
or really a freak.
A freak. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, so, could we talk for a second about girl code trauma?
Sure, yeah.
It's like, that's something that I don't think men deal with. So we as women, we know that, you know, just socially and sexually and physically, we're the underdogs. And while things are getting better with that, women are still not empowered to stand up for themselves. Will you take pornography where women are being abused, where they're being spit on, where men are ejaculating in their faces, where these things are happening, they're being degraded by men, and you take a woman who is now getting turned on by that? Because we can pair anything with sex and start to like it.
Right.
Like, we can learn to like frogs if we pair sex and frogs long enough. So you take that, and a woman who is being aroused by seeing it, and she's got this piece inside of her that goes, what is wrong with me that I am sexually aroused by seeing women be beaten?
Right.
And raped and traumatized. What is wrong with me? And we start to feel this additional shame and regret over being okay with other women being abused.
So seeing that, watching that, and it's like feeling, how can I watch what goes against my own values internally?
Right.
Yet I'm also sexually aroused by it at the same time. And that sounds like confusing.
Right. Well, and you might take a feminist, a woman who, like a true feminist, who's like, okay, equality for all. Let's treat everybody well. Let's help give those a foot up who need a foot up. And then have her addicted to women being subjugated and beat down. There's going to be a serious mental disconnect there and a serious conflict within her heart and mind. So I think that we don't address that enough else either. And they're just now starting to really realize how much secondary trauma is coming out of watching porn, because these women are still watching their counterparts be severely traumatized and abused.
Right. So it's not just the trauma of maybe their own history, the trauma that they're escaping through this fantasy. But then on top of that, what I hear you saying is that watching this material creates even more trauma inside of them. It's kind of like, I don't know how I'm trying to say this, but it's like seeing that material creates a second level of trauma for them.
Yeah, it does. And while it's creating that trauma, it then creates this arousal also, not based on the trauma, but based on what's happening. And then she will want to act that out with her partner. And now, even though she's sexually aroused by it, her body is still being beaten. She is still being forced into subjection. She is still being spit on. There are some things that no matter how arousing they might be because we pair them, they're going to pick away at our feelings of self-worth and value.
Right. So they kind of come together and create that.
Yeah. And it just keeps going deeper and deeper and deeper. And the longer she's in it, the more she acts it out, the more trauma and pain is building up under the surface. And the more that trauma and pain then needs to be numbed. And so the more she acts out. And it's this vicious, horrific cycle.
Right. Of escape and avoidance, of escaping the pain, escaping the hurt. And then I've got to escape it some more. So I'll use that sexual arousal to do that. How do women end up, for them, have you seen, how do they start to get help, or how do they reach out? Or
they're usually pretty scared. Not a lot of women will reach out. But I'll tell you, as soon as they're ready, and they do, they are ready. And they jump in with both feet. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't still relapse and slip up. But when women decide to get help, very often that decision is made and they move forward. And again, you know, it's challenging and there's still slip up and relapse, and she might wonder if recovery is what she really wants. But the number one thing for her to do is just to get it out in the light. So each of my clients I work with, we go through a full disclosure where I have them share with me everything ever. It's a 12-step 4 and 5 really is what it is. And share with me everything ever, and then see, okay, I'm not shocked. I'm not disgusted. I'm not judging you. Are you ready to let it go and move forward? That can be so healing for her.
So to kind of step out of that shame with another caring person, or to expose that shame to another caring person so they can have some healing and look at their sexuality. What about healthy sexuality for women? When women are working on this and they're moving through this process, how do they work on that? And how does their sexual fantasy and their healthy sexuality, how do they come together or separate, or what goes on for them with that?
Some of it just takes a lot of practice. So there are two main issues that women that I've worked with who have these pornography and sex addictions come into me with, and that's masturbation and fantasy while they're with a partner. Both of these things exclude the intimate partner from the act of intimacy. And they just connect us to ourselves. So a lot of the times we need to work through, and there has to be practice and training of the partner and teaching of the partner and being patient with the partner and yourself as you're trying to learn how to climax with someone else in the room.
Right.
Or through the touch of someone else instead of yourself.
Right. And I, you know, working in the field of sex addiction and porn addiction, what I've seen a lot for, I guess, for men and women, is under a lot of this is a primary, I guess I call it like difficulty connecting with other people, like being able to be relational and having that component as well in their sexuality. And if there's a lot of shame, they tend not to want to connect in that area, or it's difficult to connect, or it feels too vulnerable, so they don't. But then they're left isolated at the same time.
Yeah, and I love how you brought up the relationality there, because the healing doesn't actually happen in the bedroom. The healing happens as you wash dishes together, as you have deep, meaningful conversations, as you learn to validate and love each other inside of pain and frustration and anger and disconnect and disagreement. That's where true intimacy is built. That's where true trust and relationship is built. And it's not, you know, we have to remember, while it looks like we're dealing with a sex-based compulsion, we're dealing with pain and trauma and disconnect and this desire, this need to numb any intensity whatsoever.
Right, to escape and avoid all of that, which then leads to more isolation, more loneliness, more feelings of shame. And that's painful to live with. And if you have this means of sexual arousal to escape that, sometimes that's what people choose.
Right. It's easy. And then our amygdala is happy. You know, we've got that little lizard brain or monkey brain or monkey mind. I love that one. It just wants to keep us alive and happy. And so it wants to eat it, kill it, or have sex with it.
Right.
So we have to learn to train that amygdala to just calm down by using our frontal lobe and walking through it, talking through it, coaching ourselves through it, having friends and mentors we can trust. Say, hey, I'm feeling really angry. I need to talk through it so I don't act out. And building that trust outside of ourselves and within ourselves that calms down the sex drive, but increases the connection and the desire to have that emotional, mental intimacy with another human being, which will then help in the bedroom, help with the symptom we're treating, right?
Right. And may even lead to, in a way, more better sex in a way.
Yeah, often it does.
Yeah, because when we can talk to our partner about what's meaningful to us, what feels good to us, and show up as a whole person, we're more apt to get our needs met. We're more apt to feel connected. And I think, bonded, which is what ultimately a lot of us really want in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot what we need and what we want and what we need, that bonding and that attachment.
Right. Definitely. What would you say, if someone's listening to this, if a woman is listening to this podcast and they're struggling with this, what would you want to tell them?
I would want to tell her you're not alone. I know it feels like it, and you are absolutely worth recovery. I know there's not a ton out there for women, but keep looking, find things that work for you. And no one program is going to be the key. No one therapist, no one coach, no one sponsor. You know, I had 5 or 6 different sponsors my first 4 or 5 years of recovery. You learn what you need to from a relationship or a program, and then you go ahead and go and find another one that can teach you more.
So you really put yourself out there. You really have to dig in.
Yeah. Yeah. And realize that lifelong recovery is a lifelong recovery. And we're all trying to recover from something lifelong. We all have vices that we have to work on. For some of us, it's sex-based. For some of us, it's pride. For some of us, it's anger. For some of us, it's food. So there's no more shame in this part of humanity than there is in the other. We've just, especially for women, we don't want to believe women are capable of being carnal, right?
But right. I think that's so true. And so, yeah, you're not supposed to be that way, or it doesn't exist. And so, I mean, I think even recently we're showing a much more that women view pornography much more than ever previously thought.
Yeah, they do. And what's funny is as we're watching research show that women are watching it more and more women are also coming forward and saying, by the way, I've been doing this for like 30 years. And we're realizing this has been happening for a really long time.
Right. And what do you think for women who develop kind of a compulsive sexuality or fantasy, what do you think's the primal reason for them to develop that?
I think it depends on the woman. I think it depends on what happened, historically. For some women, they may have had a great childhood, a great upbringing, and then there was a sexual assault or there was a breakup she didn't know how to handle and enter porn or enter masturbation. I think it varies, but it all comes down to some sort of a broken heart. Something hurt a lot and porn was there.
And porn came in at the right time.
Yeah.
Right. I see that with a lot of the male sex addicts I work with as well. They are maybe have some kind of trauma in their childhood. Not necessarily, sometimes it's just they don't have any attachments in their childhood, but they find pornography at that kind of a developmental age where it helps them feel better and it just becomes their way of coping with life. And they don't realize how alone they are in it.
Right. They know that they feel alone, but in the beginning and even when things are hurting, they just feel this drive to go to it. And they're like, I'm not alone. In fact, there are too many people who want to spend time with me. I really want to go be with my porn.
Right.
But eventually that isolation starts to take over.
Yeah. And then they feel worse and sad and then they escalate their behavior.
Yeah.
Like what you kind of talked about, moving outside of porn sometimes into trying to find more intensity, trying to find that magical person that's going to take all their pain away. Tell me one question that kind of came up for me. What about the difference between a woman who's struggling with like love addiction, relationship addiction versus a woman who's struggling with just pornography? Do you see a difference or do they overlap or how do you see that?
I think oftentimes they overlap and they're just manifestations of the same pain. There's one point that I wanted to make. When we're talking about relationship addiction, there's a lot of relationship drama there and codependency and I need someone else to make me whole or I need to make someone else whole, that kind of thing. For some women, like when I started watching hentai early on, it wasn't so much about the porn. It was about I wanted to feel with the guys I was dating what I felt when I watched porn. I wanted to feel wanted. I wanted to feel pursued. And so I learned to be coquettish. I learned how to dress. I learned how to act. And there are a lot of women and men who go to porn for sex education. It's a really crappy sex ed. And it's
can you talk to the audience? For people who don't know what hentai porn is, can you explain what that is?
Oh, it's just, it's so anime. We know anime. The most popular anime probably being Pokemon. There's different types of anime. And hentai actually means pervert. And a lot of hentai is about like a teacher or a police officer or someone in authority who then starts to lust after a young woman, usually 13, 15, 17-year-old young woman, and then enters into a sexual relationship with her. There's an imbalance of power. There is a lack of boundaries on the young woman's part and the adult male's part, that kind of thing. So quite literally, hentai means pervert.
Right. So for you, that sparked something in you that just, and then you went out and was kind of, I guess, looking for that in some way.
So I think that I just went to hentai because it's what was available.
Okay.
It's what the people around me were watching. I actually think there's a vampire version. I think I probably would have been more into that because I was all into vampire role play and stuff. But this is what was available to me. And it was working. I didn't know there were other options. Now there are tons more options, unfortunately. More and more depraved every year that passes.
So a person may find the kind of pornography that works for them.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll keep experimenting until we find what works. And for me, I was like, this works. Didn't think of looking for any other options. And it actually started with bubblegum, which I think is now called manga. I don't know. I can't remember.
Right, right.
Which is just teen drama and romance, really.
And so that kind of romance, that fantasy, you had said something earlier about kind of looking for that, for the person who has love addiction, kind of looking for that fantasy.
Yeah, they're looking to feel those feelings that they can't always get in the real world.
Right.
It's that limerence. It's that the butterflies and the arousal and the wondering and the chemicals. And hentai is very good at producing that all the time.
Right. So, okay. So you can kind of feel it and create it in this fantasy world.
Yeah.
But then once again, left with the aloneness.
Right.
Yeah. Fantasy won't do it. Won't really help us feel connected anyway.
No, it really won't. And there comes a point when there's no one left to connect with and we go, what just happened to my life? Hopefully we get to that point sooner and say, okay, I'm missing out on real people.
Right. Right. Yeah. So what for women in recovery, what is different for them? Like what do you think they have to do?
So women need to be empowered. So they need courage and empowerment. The courage to stand up and say what needs to be said, to hold boundaries, to say, no, you don't get to hit me when we're sexually intimate. No, you don't get to spit on me. And no, don't do that in my face either. Who get to have these boundaries and realize, you know what, maybe I don't like to have this happen or that happen, or maybe I don't even like to be with this person. And learning to say no and then hold those boundaries takes a lot of courage. But first, you have to empower her and help her to recognize she has value as a human being, and nobody gets to step on that. Nobody gets to throw her away, treat her like garbage, wipe their feet on her. That's not love. That's not care. That's not concern. And that's not healthy. So these women need to be empowered to then stand up and have the courage to hold boundaries, to learn who they are physically, mentally, emotionally, sexually, spiritually. What do they love? What do they like? Because the world tells us what we like. especially in porn. It tells us exactly what we like, and we don't have a say in porn. Even the feminist porn, someone is very often being subjugated. So, am I saying that word right? I think so.
Sure, I think so. Okay, so really that empowerment that they can come from a place that fits with their integrity and what fits for them and what is right for them to be able to have a voice to that.
Yeah, I love that you use the word integrity. That's a big word I use with my women, like living a life of integrity of what my values are, what my morals are, because they're two different things, and what that means to me and what I will and won't engage in, not just in the bedroom, but in every area of my life. Can I live in integrity always?
And I think with, like, you know, when addiction, one of its things that it just robs any kind of addiction, love addiction, sex addiction, drug addiction, it robs people of that inherent integrity because it's driving them to make choices that don't feel right for them, that isn't right for them, that goes against their values, their morals. And yet the addiction is all encompassing and all powerful. And I think that's so hard. You know, when I work with people and they start to get recovery and they start to get a sense of their integrity back, it creates so much empowerment and value and lowers that shame. I mean, they have to definitely make up for some of their choices that they made in their addiction. But once they start to get that integrity, because they're behaving, their behavior lines up with their value system. I mean, you can begin to see it. It takes time, but then I like that you say that because it fits that. And then they can feel good and they can get that recovery and then start to really move forward.
I agree.
Which is very exciting.
Yeah, it is. It is so great to watch women, and for you probably guys, like, do you work with women too?
Yeah, I do.
Awesome. It is so amazing to see men and women get into recovery and then start to actually love and care about themselves.
Right.
And take care of themselves. And their houses start to be tidier. And their purses are cleaned out. And their cars aren't nasty all the time. Like, it's because they start to see that they have worth and value.
Right.
Through living that integrity. I just love it.
Yeah, it's a great feeling to watch people, like, take charge of their life and find healing. And then find connection and find meaning and find real good relationships. And move out of the fantasy and be able to bring some of the real connection. And I'm not against all fantasy. I think there's healthy fantasy. I don't want to sound completely black and white. But once you can balance that with that integrity and with that connection, it creates that bond. It creates what people really want.
Right. Like using the fantasy not to distract from life, but to plan.
Yeah.
To set goals.
Yeah.
To create what you really want, exactly like you said.
Yeah, which is awesome. So we're kind of coming up on time. If there's a woman out there listening to this podcast and they're struggling, what would you want to tell them? What would you want to say to them?
Hang in there. Keep looking for something that will work for you. Keep reading blog posts. Keep recognizing that you are worth getting into recovery for. You have value. You might not feel it right now. I get that. I understand it. Women who come in, and you've probably seen this too, Dwayne, the women who come into recovery, they come in feeling so deflated, so worthless. And it's not true. Nothing that has been done to you, nothing you have done can change the fact that you are a human being with intrinsic worth and value, and you don't deserve to be treated like garbage by yourself or anyone else.
Oh, well said. I think that's so true. So if someone is out there looking, how can they find more information about you and what you offer?
I think probably the easiest way is Facebook. I know probably Facebook isn't great for people who go into fantasy, but.
Sure. But you know, you can connect on Facebook too.
You can. Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can. So the Real Love Tribe on Facebook, that's me, Real Love Tribe, or you can email me, Lacey, L-A-C-Y, at herrecoveryroadmap.com.
Great. And you know what? I will link all that in the show notes as well, so people can go to theaddictedmind.com and get all your information and if they want to know more about you and how you can help as well, which I think is great, great work. We need as many people out there helping with addiction. So I'm grateful for that. So thank you so much, Lacey, for coming on to The Addicted Mind. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dwayne. I appreciate you having me on. This was great.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Addicted Mind podcast. One of the things that we didn't mention in this episode is that Lacey is releasing her new book, Addicted to Love, and it is available for pre-order on her website. And you can find all that information at theaddictedmind.com/57. So check that out. I think that's very exciting that she's doing that and sharing her wisdom with the world. So I'd encourage you guys to check that out if that's something that interests you. Once again, don't forget, please join our Facebook group. You can find us on Facebook. Just search The Addicted Mind Podcast. Answer a few questions and join. And we're creating a community there of resources for people who are looking for help and who are struggling with addiction and want good information about it and how they can get help. So please join it if that's something that interests you. And I guess from there, have a wonderful day. And I will talk to you again next week.
Oh, hey, it's Erin.
And I'm Michaela, and we're the hosts of the Two Sober Girls podcast, and we are on a mission to spill the wild truth about sobriety.
Forget the rosé all day cliche. Sobriety is flipping amazing.
Absolutely. It's not just about quitting the drink. It's a gift you give yourself and your loved ones.
So what are you waiting for? Break up with that old toxic relationship with alcohol and let us show you the possibilities.
And here's the thing. Everything your precious heart desires becomes way easier without the influence of alcohol.
We're not just two sober girls. We're also wellness coaches. We're here to show you how to optimize health, lifestyle, and beauty, feel sexy and alive as F.
So stay tuned because we're rolling out new episodes every Monday wherever you get your podcasts. And trust us, they have your name written all over them. We can't wait to share the magic of sobriety and wellness with you. Subscribe to Two Sober Girls podcast today and come follow us on Instagram for behind the scenes action and send us a DM. We can't wait to meet you.